This is the September 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's for Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. In Normal, Illinois, we're joined by AgMarket.net's Kurt Kimmel. And from AgTraderTalk.com in Watseka, Merrill Crowley is here. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to us anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play right from the website. You can also find a podcast tab there where you can subscribe to us, or you can just search us out, Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report, in your favorite podcast application. Let's begin with this question, just to see how everybody felt about USDA reports on Tuesday of this week. Dave Chatterton, they raised total production for corn just a little bit, but mostly that was done via the acreage change and certainly not through the yield. What'd you think?
Yeah, Todd, I think there was a little bit of a few disgruntled producers out there, a few disgruntled market participants out there when they aggressively raised the acres. But, you know, that those numbers came directly almost from the FSA report and following the September report. That shouldn't have been a big surprise to the market. USDA did choose to cut yield here, you know, fairly close to what the trade was expecting, or really right on top of what the trade was expecting. And in doing so, we did get a small production increase. That keeps the balance sheet for corn kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum from what we're seeing in soybeans. We've got carry out in corn that's still, at least on paper right now, above 2.2 billion. And in doing so with the USDA, you said, you know, raising acres here, increasing harvested acres with a small yield cut, net of production gain. They also chose not to cut demand, which was a little bit curious. I think those changes could come down the road. So from maybe a looking forward standpoint, Todd, from the USDA, I think if we impute maybe some small additional yield losses coming up on the October and subsequent reports, I think it's pretty easy for those yield losses to be absorbed by a change in demand. So lower, you know, ethanol numbers have been good, but certainly you could argue that the export numbers look too high. So any way you slice it, we're left with a corn carryout that looks very burdensome in terms of how we're going to, you know, finish the harvest and start looking forward to 2024.
That corn carryout, 19 million bushels higher than it was last month, now at 2.221 billion bushels. The soybean carryout is, however, lower than last month when it was 245 million bushels, down 25 million bushels to 220. Merrill Crowley, why don't you go through some of those numbers in the supply and demand table and how they changed. Yield was dropped. Also, they added acreage for soybeans as well.
Well, I think right now we are in a time period where 220 is your pipeline. So then they got to do some creative things to keep us above pipeline until they have more facts or less bushels. If you do have less bushels, as it looks like we may have, then I would assume that prices will go higher. And right now we're still higher than Brazil. So, it's going to be difficult to continue to compete with Brazil if our prices go higher. And it'll help Brazil come up, but our strong dollar and everything will keep us out of this market for quite a while. So we kind of still need, even with the beans, a weather market to help push us higher. I was impressed with the rally we had yesterday. The close was just shy yesterday of 1350 for getting November beans back over that price. We're at 1361 tonight. So I think you've got a good reversal in there. Things could go higher. And how the USDA is going to do that is just conjecture at this point.
Take this up with you, Kurt Kimmel. There was an 0.8 of bushel drop for yield for soybeans. They're now at 50.1. They did add 100,000 acres, although it seems to me that the bigger issue may have been that while in corn they did not adjust demand, for soybeans they did adjust demand. They dropped exports by 35 million and domestic crushing by 10 million. Were those numbers something you expected to see?
Well, you never know going into the report how they're going to divvied it out. I think they've got a goal, a number they're after, then they'll adjust as they go. The acreage, as we well know, was that well advertised. I'm surprised on the corn acres up, 800. Seems like whenever we have production problems or acres need to be cut, particularly harvested acres, they never come. But in this case here, they're getting aggressive the opposite way. As far as demand cuts, boy, that's especially in beans to take carry out down to 220. 220 carry out is the lowest we've been since 2015. So if you look at a ending stocks chart, these are fairly tight over the last few years, and to go there now, you have to wonder. And what I mean by that is September 1's the first day of the marketing year. We got to go clear into August 31 because we got a whole lot of marketing year in front of us. But I think it's anticipation of the Southern Hemisphere competition and so forth. So we'll see how it goes. We still have to wrap up the old crop, the 22 crop. Yeah, we had the September stocks report. We'll see what type of stocks estimates they come up with that. Then they'll do the math backwards and see what we have on this 23 carry in. As far as the corn, the carry out over 2 billion, that's plenty. In fact, it's the opposite of the beans. That's probably the highest we've had here in the last 5-6 years. It's kind of the upper end. As far as the corn demand goes, we'll see how that goes as we go through the marketing season, Todd.
Dave Chatterton, I want to stay with soybeans for just a bit. Had USDA not adjusted the demand side of the supply and demand table, this would have been a 175 carryout instead of a 220 carryout. Many are fearful that the soybean crop did not drop in yield enough. What's your assessment of that yield drop and how things might change going forward? And if you could roll the grain stocks numbers in, it would be interesting to see what that looks like.
When we look forward, we do see a very likely path for additional yield declines coming forward. Now, whether that's in October, whether that's a combination of October, November, and the final numbers in December, January, we're going to have to wait and find out. But at the end of the day, that has the effect of just tightening this balance sheet further into, to Kurt and Merrill's point, you essentially have the USDA in a situation where they're preserving a minimum pipeline supply of soybeans. So whatever that production drops, we're going to be forced to cut demand to match up with that to keep this 200 or 220 pipeline supply. I mean, if you look back, the lowest bean stocks that we have recorded on the USDA balance sheets came in 2013-14 at 92 million. But that was a situation where, demand at this point today is 20 or 25% above where we were in that time period. So certainly it's a different calculation or different comparison. How tight the balance sheet ultimately gets, I guess we'll have to find out. We're in a situation where you have two very different types of balance sheets, not only domestically between corn and beans, Todd, but I think also in the beans between the U.S. soybeans and where we're at on the global front. If you look at global, soybean supplies, we're looking at a gain year over year in global, in global stocks of 15 million metric tons, according to USDA. That's 550 million bushels, more than twice our carryout, that we're showing for the U.S. right now. That's about 23% higher year on year. And so right now the world is, with soybeans not reacting in a way in terms of price, I think we're seeing a bet that another record crop or potential record crop in South America is going to be able to supply the majority of the export demand while the U.S., crushes almost the entirety of its beans. And those cuts that we talked about coming in soybeans due to lower yields, I think have to come off the export side, Todd.
So let's talk about where the bean crop goes. From USDA, we'll have a total production this year of 4.146 billion bushels. Crushings are 2.2 and the exports are 1.7. So it's pretty evenly dispersed between use in-house domestically and as an export market. And Merrill, this seems like it will cause a problem for farmers to think about what happens with the price of soybeans, because as was just pointed out, the world market takes so much of the bean crop that even if it looks short here, there's still an awful lot of beans that are available. Can there be much of a rally in the beans, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there could be. It depends on the weather. Right now, if you look at South America, their weather is pretty dry. And if it stays that way and they have to, and it cuts beans, and it's, I can't remember the year it's similar to, but El Nino does not bode well for South American crops in Brazil. Mostly right now it's dry on the eastern side, but it bodes well for Argentina, so they will be back in. But I don't think Argentina, even with the large crop they have, can necessarily take care of the entire crop, and so beans will have to come here. Will it be mostly domestic? It could be. It depends on what happens with this bean oil. I've noticed lately that bean oil has diverted itself from crude. So that's kind of interesting to see how that plays out. But in my mind, yeah, we can get higher with beans, maybe as high as 15. Like I said, what's the weather going to be like? And that's going to determine what happens with our demand.
Tell me about the export market, Kurt, and what you think the future of it through January might be. This is the time frame where U.S. soybeans should be going out of the country at a quick clip. There are two issues, I suppose. One, will China buy? And two, even if they do, can we get them down the Mississippi River easily?
Well, the exports, this is the prime time to see the sales. We're just not seeing the 1 to 2 million metric ton sales we've seen in the past. Logistic wise, it needs to take place fairly quickly now, because as we move into next spring, we're going to be looking at the focus on the southern hemisphere. So it's critical to get these sales going. On the weekly exports sales report on Thursday here, we only sold about 26 million bushel beans. I know it's only the first, second week here in the marketing year, but we're behind the pace. We need to pick that up. As far as crush goes, I don't know if we can really back off crush just a whole lot in through here. This world vegetable oil market's still on fire. We've got olive oil at some 10-year highs. Before we started moving into late summer here, the commercials were shipping or selling beans to Europe and shipping bean oil back. So there's a fairly strong demand for bean oil and even meal. And I think that crush is going to hang in there and not go away. In fact, on Friday's NOPA crush report, they're looking at 168 to 169 million bushels being crushed for the month of August. And on the bean oil stocks, you know, they're looking at a fairly tight 1.46 to 1.48 billion pounds.
Dave Chatterton, anything to add on the supply and demand tables for soybean before we move on?
Yeah, I don't think so, Todd. I mean, I just note, I mean, to Kurt's point, you know, domestic crush margins for soybean still in that $2 to $3 a bushel range here. And looking forward, and just, you know, we're going to get an open crush update tomorrow on Friday, but I suspect that, you know, there's going to be very little slowdown in that process. And that, again, kind of puts the exodus on the export side of the fence here. So, certainly, you know, this balance sheet stays tight in soybeans. Certainly elevated prices are warranted. I think right now it's a question of, you know, maybe we can make a pretty strong argument for limited downside because of that. But we need a change in that world situation or a dramatic pickup in the Chinese demand pace in order to really get that, you know, to get that rally started, if you will. And to Merrill, you know, as Merrill indicated, whether in South America, we're always going to have our ends in our outs. They're just getting ready to go start planning in a number of areas. The El Nino that he indicated can be tough for that northern part of Brazil, but typically central Brazil, southern Brazil, Argentina come off good. So there's some give and take with that. But we'll have to see how these moisture levels go and what kind of a crop scare we may or may not be able to drum up in terms of what it will do for price.
I'll ask a rather pointed question. So each of you are satisfied that China will continue to buy at the pace USDA has put forth for exports. China is not the only buyer, but the largest by far. And that makes the 220 ending stocks tight. Dave, I'll return to you and then hit Merrill and Kurt.
Yeah, I mean, import margins in China are good at the moment. They have been stockpiling South American beans, meaning they've been importing more than they have crushed. If you look at the forward margins that are tied, they're not as good. So I think China will take U.S. beans. They're not going to take any more than they have to, and they're probably not going to take as many as we would like them to. But in light of the rationing situation that's needed due to the carryout, I think that's about the only way we can play this. In other words, we're going to keep crushing beans here domestically to a point that unless China is overshoots on exports or imports, we'll find a way to balance the sheet out. And I think China will be a buyer, although it may be a little bit disappointing at the end of the process.
Yeah, I think they pretty well did a great job on that. They're just going to buy as much as they need until they get into that South American crop, and they're just going to continue to lag on that until they get there. But then, two, as we hinted on earlier here, we're going to have some shipping issues out of the Gulf, but that's going to make this or keep this Pacific Northwest bid fairly firm, as that's the shortest route from the U.S. to Asia.
We're going to have, like Kurt said, a tough situation getting beans out. China may want to come to this market, and we may not be able to get them out through the Gulf or through the Panama Canal. Then we're going to have to get it out to the Pacific, and they're going to have to start bidding for that. And I think you could see a big change in basis patterns where here in the East, we have usually the better basis patterns, and that could actually move west if the demand for beans comes out of the Pacific Northwest. I do think China will continue to buy. I think they'll need more. They've got to feed their people. They always, and that comes first and foremost. But how they're going to manage that, I don't know. If you have, they're definitely thinking that they want U.S. beans. They've been pretty aggressive, in my mind, even with the fact that we have such a large crop in South America to pull from, yet they're still coming here to get ours. And the other thing that we're going to have to look at and wonder how it's going to work out is this moisture change. Are they going to have Brazil cut back on moisture, or are they going to let them stay at 14 versus what they're wanting at 13? And that changes in December. So that too can affect what's happening. Currently, they want beans mostly from Brazil, but they also see a good price to buy, I think, right now, the lower levels. And the charts are saying, yep, that's a good place to buy so far. We'd have to take out the recent low in order to send this thing back down.
Merrill, what are you hearing as it relates to early corn yield reports?
The earliest yields have been down from past years, but I don't know how much of that is due to drought, how much is, because the earlier droughty stuff is going to come out of the fields quicker. But otherwise, it's kind of variable. Talking to a guy today, he lives and works mostly up around the northern part of the state, and he's talking about a customer that's looking at excellent and even record corn production. He's actually from around the Springfield area, and he's talking about those yields being down. So it's spotty, it's mixed. I don't think you can draw a conclusion at this time from what we're seeing, even from the government. It's interesting how they have our condition rating kind of matched up to last year's condition rating at this time, and the yields come pretty close to what they had for the final yield last year. It's 173.3, it's 173.8 this year. Now, on the bean side of things, we have the lowest condition rating in 7 years, and yet we didn't move downward to more in yield at this time anyway. So they're trying to keep things in line. I don't think they're sure about what to do with this drought, because it is such a mixed and variable type crop.
Kurt Kimmel, what are you hearing?
Highly variable, like Merrill hinted there. I mean, you can find a disaster success story all within 5 miles of each other. It's very spotty moisture patterns. Also, too early in the spring, there's some hard beaten rains that put the crop under stress or not off to the best situation. I know locally here, you just get east of Bloomington Normal. Man, they were short on moisture. Their expectations were below 200 bushel acre, but this early stuff is better than expected, and they're just above 200 bushel acre on corn. So that's a pleasant surprise. Moisture reading still fairly moist, a lot of, 24%, but there are some areas, down in the 20. So highly variable. Once observation, Western Iowa, in those hills, we've seen or hearing reports that on the south and west side, those were direct sunlight hits, and those are fairly poor. On the other side of the hills, it's pretty good. On the south west side, one field was making 40 bushel. On the other side of the hill, it was 150. So highly variable.
So, I mean, we're starting to get a pickup in our reports here, although it's awful early on beans, both corn and beans highly variable. I think the theme that we expected maybe coming into harvest looks to be unchanged, at least at this point. And that is that, yields overall are variable, but they're probably a little bit below where they were a year ago. Bean yields seem to have a little bit more upside here than what we found in corn of late. Not a disaster, maybe just not what we were hoping for during July when those rains were coming in pretty regularly and before it got dry again in August. I think the two other takeaways here are a couple of things. One is the test weight issue in corn. We're seeing some corn, even in fields that are yielding in Illinois, let's say 240, 250, good yields, but test weight in some cases 52, 53 pounds, a few customers getting docked a little bit as they deliver some of that and I think is a symptomatic to, just the stress that the crop was under this year. We definitely have an anthracnose, issue, not only in corn, but in soybeans. The other issue, I think, in corn right now, beyond the test weight is fungicide versus non-fungicide or full fungicide versus a lighter fungicide program. And that spread seems to be higher than normal. In other words, we're talking in some cases 20, 25, 30 bushels per acre difference between the full fungicide, corn acres and what did not receive the corn or receive the full fungicide. So, we'll take those things as they kind of, start to roll in here. But no big surprises at this particular point.
Is there a particular geography associated with the fungicide issues?
I think it's statewide. Yeah, I think it's statewide, Todd. I think it's just about everywhere. The tougher, areas seem to be in the southern part of the state, which is not all that unusual. I think the anthracnose in the beans is something that we haven't really seen much of, or at least seen much of in the last 10 or 15 years. It's typically confined to, Louisiana, Mississippi, areas with high humidity. And we did have some of that. I think that's what got this late thriving issue going. It seems to have, from what we can tell, that spring in July was somewhat effective, but really had to be doing it during that first week or first 10 days of August to really kind of catch this last episode. And the stress that we added late really added to those woes, if you will.
Now, finally, I would like to take up one last topic, and it's what farmers should do across the scale at this point, and whether or not they should use their bins. We've had a lot of discussions over the last 10 months related to interest rates, how that's changed, the calculus for putting a crop in the bin, both corn and soybeans, what it costs to carry it there. And then as the Fed had been easing back, still is, but may actually raise interest rates in November or December, apparently, again, how that impacts the calculus and what producers should think about as they harvest this crop and need to find a place to store and or sell it. And I think, Merrill, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts?
Personally, I think storage would work the best on farm storage. Definitely the commercial storage is not going to work. I mean, it's going to end up chewing things away as well as your interest rate. You just, it just takes off the price. It's pretty expensive to store it in a commercial facility. On farm, you can store it, capture the maybe a basis improvement that comes along. We are seeing carries work to where it's pretty, it's almost telling you, go ahead and carry it to another month and look for basis improvements in that. Bean-wise, I just see more potential for soybeans. If you can, I'd like to see them stored. A lot of people are talking about selling them across the scale, and I don't really want to be with the group of everybody else that sells the beans and holds the corn. because in my mind, the potential is better for the beans.
I agree with Merrill there. He pretty well hit the nail on the head. If price of beans futures, I know there's some wide basis starting to take place, but if beans stay firm here, producers are going to be inclined to move a few more beans to free up storage for the corn. But there's been a lot of conversations on the cost of money, and so guys need to kind of push the pencil on that. But I have a feeling, though, this will be stored until December, and after the first year, our fear is that there's just going to be a ton of grain hit the market, be just like a second harvest.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I think these guys have it spot on. You know, the farmer attitude right now is, you know, hey, I have some profitability in beans. I can sell those across the scale. I'm not in the same situation in corn, particularly if I'm tributary to an inland or a river market with some basis issues right now and with high inputs. So for that corn that gets stored, Todd, again, we're not against that. There is some carry in the market, as Merrill mentioned. There's an interest cost that goes along with that and an opportunity cost. But I think when you do that, you have to make the decision, the conscious decision right up front, to have an offer in against that corn and probably in a modest type of a rally. So we're talking a 25, 35, 40 cent rally, something in that 520, 25 range for these futures up to maybe 540 or 45, and have that. You know, or if you're pricing against March, similar numbers. But I think you need to have that in place and be able to lift that. And if we're not going to get that by the time we get to, let's say, early December, to Kurt's point, you have to be aware that there's going to be a lot in position wanting to move or wanting to price after the first of the year. And corn could be a very uphill battle here in terms of what we're looking at next year. The corn bean ratio right now leans a little bit towards beans, but it's not a compelling case. We saw that last year, and it didn't seem to affect the acreage a whole lot. If the acreage patterns holds true, we could actually lose a few bean acres here in the U.S. So in doing so, you know, if South America is able to land a record corn crop based on record acres and we grow another, you know, we plant and cultivate another big crop next year, we could be looking at some pressure really, you know, early, you know, into the first quarter of next year all the way through. So a lot of things can change, but I think you want to have a plan for that corn that you put in the bin is the message.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com. I'll start with you today.
Well, we got some good lows, and the interesting low is in Chicago wheat. And if we can continue to follow through this week on that and corn as well, the corn, if it could break up above a $5 mark, has a real good chance of getting up to 540 because it's in a sideways range now, and that would be what that would project. We've got this huge descending triangle. If that breaks the measure on that, it's up as high as 570. Something has to happen to make that occur. We can't just keep things as they are. Open interest, terribly low. And volume is also low. So I'm not sure where we're going to find the spark exactly to push this. But I think you need, like Dave said, get your plan set up, be prepared to make moves and get offers in.
Kirk Kimmel from AgMarket.net, your final word?
Yeah, the some optimism here if we can see some technical help, breaking the downtrend lines, getting above the moving average, see some recovery. But if this market's following 2013 type of rhythm, we still have some downside risk involved. And that equates also to the discussion of crop insurance, of having some downside protection. There's some strategies you can do to kind of hedge that. But you got to remember, once we get past October, those puts or downside strategies are no longer. So if you're going to hold it past October, you need to have a marketing plan going into the first of the year.
And finally, Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. You know, I pretty much agree with what's been said so far. I think from a producer standpoint, we're in a situation where the market does not seem corn and bean wise to want to go a lot lower because we're still concerned about U.S. yield and what our final production is going to be. I think the upside is also somewhat limited here by the export competition we have, by the size of the competing exporter crops that are out there, and by the potential for this record crop in South America. So the key going forward, you know, if we look at what's happening, that corn balance sheet being very burdensome, beans being somewhat more opportunistic, we know that beans, you know, they have been the leader of the complex really all summer and even really all year, and I think that will continue to be the case. So the corn outlook is really dependent on how high beans may be able to pull them and what may happen. But you know, it's not too early to start thinking about, you know, like these guys have indicated, having your offers in and picking some prices. I'd also say that it's not too early to start thinking about 24 corn. We're still above, we're still in that 5-10 area for futures. Input costs look like they're going to be substantially lower, you know, going into 2024 in terms of nitrogen, in terms of the inputs and P and K, et cetera. So it presents a much different case, and it may be a scenario where it makes some sense to take a little bit of risk off the board going forward into those time periods. But really, we're in a situation here where, unfortunately, the U.S. story is mostly told in terms of tweaking the yield into final, and it's going to turn very much into a Southern Hemisphere and a weather in South America type of a story. And, you know, getting ahead of that as much as you can is always, you know, typically going to be a benefit. I would throw in, Todd, to just real quick that, you know, for producers who are interested, and Kurt mentioned the crop insurance, we do have margin protection. It's a fall product. It has an input value with it. Those values, because of the carry in the market, again, are above $5. You know, if you need to talk to an insurance agent about that, it might be worth your while to get a few details on it.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Kurt Kimmel of agmarket.net, Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Merrill Crowley of agtradertalk.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.